What is clear is that the heritage of Israel already contains the creation of defensive technology that surpassed the other nations of the region, an iron dome or iron beam of its day, which made Jerusalem famous thousands of years ago. Welcome to Jerusalem 365, episode 21, the predecessor to Iron Dome. I'm Meir Soloveitchik. You know that an Israeli achievement is impressive when the New York Times cannot contain its awe. Thus, a recent headline in that paper respectfully reported, quote, "Israel builds a laser weapon to zap threats out of the sky. From science fiction to facts in the air, Israel says a prototype downed rockets and drones in recent tests." We are further told in the article that, quote, "After two decades of research and experimentation, Israeli defense officials now say they have a working prototype of a high-powered laser gun that can intercept rockets, mortar shells, drones, and anti-tank missiles in flight. Officials said that the system performed successfully in a recent series of live-fire tests in the southern Israeli desert, destroying a rocket, a mortar shell, and a drone, and prompting a standing ovation from officials watching the action on screen." And the article adds, "Brigadier General Yaniv Rotem, head of the Defense Ministry's research and development team, said that during the live fire tests in March, incoming threats were intercepted within seconds of detection, not minutes as in previous tests, and at a range of up to 6 miles. We have a full system to demonstrate the capability," he said in an interview. "We are there," end quote. The name of this system is Iron Beam, and it will, please God soon, become the successor to Israel's already phenomenally successful Iron Dome. From missiles to lasers, Israel continues to amaze in its creativity and defense technology. And it is therefore fascinating to realize that the modern Jewish state has a predecessor in ancient Israel. For in a fascinating passage, the Bible tells us of a king in Jerusalem who invented defensive weaponry that remains a central part of his legacy, and who also leaves us with a lesson for our own time. The next king in our story to reign in Jerusalem is Amatziah, who wages war against the northern kingdom of Israel and its king, whose name, a bit confusingly, is the same as Amatziah's father, Joash. Joash, king of Israel, the northern king, defeats Davidic Jerusalem. Thus, 2 Chronicles tells us in chapter 25, "So Joash, the king of Israel, went up, and they saw one another in the face, both he and Amatziah, king of Judah, at Bet Shemesh, which belongs to Judah. And Judah was put to the worst before Israel, and they fled every man to his tent. And Joash, the king of Israel, took Amatziah, king of Judah, the son of Joash, the son of Jehoahaz, at Bet Shemesh, and brought him to Jerusalem, and broke down the wall of Jerusalem, from the gate of Ephraim to the corner gate, 400 cubits. And he took all the gold and the silver and all the vessels that were found in the house of God with Obed-Edom and the treasures of the king's house, the hostages also, and returned to Samaria." We must pause to ponder these verses, for they are easy to miss, but are so important. This, ladies and gentlemen, is the first time ever in the Bible that the walls of Jerusalem have been breached. David, as we saw, seems to have entered the city in a different way. And Pharaoh Shoshan conquered many other cities in the Holy Land, but did not destroy the walls of Jerusalem. But here, the city's defenses are indeed overcome, not by a Gentile kingdom, but an Israelite monarch from the northern portion of the Holy Land. And he breaches the wall 400 cubits. That's around 600 feet. The description of the breach and the plunder of Jerusalem at the hands of an Israelite utilizes language, as some note, that is similar to a future breaching and conquest of Jerusalem, that of Nebuchadnezzar, the destruction of Babylon that is yet to come. It was members of the covenantal people of Israel fighting members of the covenantal people of Israel that first damaged Jerusalem. And the message, perhaps, is that ultimately it is conflict among God's people that truly makes Jewish Jerusalem vulnerable, a theme to which we shall return throughout the series. The defeat of King Amatziah's Jerusalem, the first breach of Jerusalem, must have scarred the city's collective memory. And it is therefore no coincidence that the next king in the city, Amatziah's son Uzziah, was known for his focus on military matters. Thus, 2 Chronicles chapter 26. "Moreover, Uzziah had a host of fighting men that went out to war by bands, according to the number of their account by the hands of Yehiel the scribe and Maaseiah the ruler, under the hand of Hananiah, one of the king's captains. The whole number of the chief of the fathers of the mighty men of valor were 2,600. And under their hand was an army 300,000 and 7,500 that made war with mighty power to help the king against the enemy. And Uzziah prepared for them throughout all the host shields and spears and helmets and armor and bows and slings to cast stones. Then the Bible adds the most fascinating verse of all. Perhaps in response to the way Jerusalem had been assaulted in the previous generation, the Davidic king Uzziah seems to have manifested among his men a genius for technological invention and the creation thereby of defensive weaponry. We are told, and he made in Jerusalem devices invented by cunning men to be on the towers and upon the bulwarks to shoot arrows and great stones withal. And his name spread far abroad, for he was marvelously helped till he was strong. Uzziah was made famous throughout the Middle East through the invention of defensive weaponry, some marvelous form of an original iron dome for Jerusalem. What are these devices? In Hebrew, chishbonot machshevet choshev, creations of creative men, which, as the Bible goes on to tell us, allowed for the hurling of stones. To this question, two interesting answers have been offered. Here is an historical analysis from Christopher Jones's website on Bible and archaeology, which is called Gates of Nineveh. Quote, "The obvious explanation is that these devices were catapults, but this merely raises another question. The generally accepted history of the catapult holds that it was first invented in the Greek city-state of Syracuse on the island of Sicily in 399 BC. The Syracusan general Dionysius I had led a military coup in 405 BC that overthrew Syracuse's democratically elected government and installed himself as dictator. His first acts were to put Syracuse's society and economy on a war footing in preparation for attacking Carthage, who controlled the western half of Sicily and seized total control of the island. In order to do this, Dionysius brought in engineers from around the Greek world to work on inventing new weapons. The Greeks in Italy had previously invented an early crossbow called the gastrophetes, which could shoot an arrow further than a bow. Dionysius's engineers took this a step further and created even larger arrow and stone throwing machines for attacking Carthaginian fortifications. But," he continues, "Uzziah reigned in the first half of the 8th century BC. He lived 350 years before the catapult was invented," end quote. What are we to make of this? Jones goes on to note that there have been those who suggested that actually, perhaps, the catapult was invented earlier. Quote, "A few authors have argued that the Syracusans were not the first to come up with the idea of using levers, springs, and torque to fling boulders at their enemies. They point to a few archaeological finds and clues from ancient writers to suggest a more ancient and Eastern origin. In the mid-8th century, at the same time as Uzziah, text from Egypt describing the Egyptian pharaoh Pyes' siege of Hermopolis states that the attacking Egyptian army included hurlers made out of wood. Unfortunately, that is all we know. A hurler was something made of wood that hurled things." End quote. The question, as Jones notes, is why the catapult, if it was invented around the time of Uzziah, would not have spread more widely around the world before the battle at Syracuse. There is, therefore, he explains, another possibility, that the Bible's description of Uzziah's special defensive inventions refers to towers overseeing the gates with holes in them made for dropping rocks directly on those assaulting the walls of the city. Fascinatingly, as he points out, the Assyrian reliefs of the assault on another Holy Land location, Lachish, show just this sort of siege tower set up by Judean defenders. Jones adds, quote, "Could some sort of similar construction been present in the towers of Jerusalem? We have no artistic or archaeological remains of the upper story of any Jerusalem tower. However, the Assyrian reliefs from Nineveh that portray Sennacherib's siege of Lachish in 701 BC do show us Israelite fortification towers from that city. Several of the towers have archers shooting arrows from behind shields and a superstructure placed over the battlements. They also feature a sort of slotted window at the top of the tower." And he adds, "Could one or all of these innovations be the inventions installed by Uzziah's men on the towers and corner towers of Jerusalem? If so, they may have been first used in Jerusalem and by the late 8th century spread to other fortified cities in Judah, such as Lachish." End quote. Which was it? What was Jerusalem's first iron dome? Catapults or defensive siege towers? Both interpretations are interesting, and both are put forward in the amazing Dat Mikra commentary on the Book of Chronicles, which also notes, fascinatingly, that Josephus's rendering of the verse clearly indicates an assumption of a sort of rudimentary catapult system defending the city. Whatever it was, what is clear is that the heritage of Israel already contains the creation of defensive technology that surpassed the other nations of the region an iron dome or iron beam of its day, which made Jerusalem famous thousands of years ago. Long ago, as today, the Jews of the Holy Land had, as the Bible put it, creative inventions from creative people. That alone is remarkable, and several lessons are to be learned from this. The first is that developing defenses is profoundly important, but, as modern Israel understands very well, these defenses do not make the people invulnerable. The Dot Mikra commentary, which was written by Yehuda Kiel, also points out that given the defensive technology described surrounding Jerusalem, we can well understand what is ultimately written in the Book of Lamentations following the destruction of Jerusalem. Lo ha'aminu malchei eretz kol yoshvei tevel. The kings of the world could not believe, nor the inhabitants of the earth, ki avot sarva oyev b'sharei Yerushalayim, that an assailant and enemy could have entered the gates of Jerusalem. But enter it they did. Defensive creativity is essential, but it does not guarantee invulnerability. The second lesson emphasized by the Bible is linked to the first, which is that while technological brilliance is very laudatory and critical, it should also be combined with faith in God, with the recognition of how much we need his protection. The Book of Chronicles emphasizes that it was the brilliance of Uzziah's military and his men's defensive inventions that led him to arrogance, and he took upon himself the honors of the priesthood as well. The Bible tells us, "But when he was strong, his heart was lifted up to his destruction, for he transgressed against the Lord his God, and went into the temple of the Lord to burn incense upon the altar of incense. And Azariah the priest went in after him, and with him 80 priests of the Lord that were valiant men, and they withstood Uzziah the king and said unto him, It is not fitting for thee, Uzziah, to burn incense unto the Lord, but to the priests, the sons of Aaron." God, in turn, punishes the king for his arrogance with tzarat, a word usually rendered as leprosy, but which refers, I think, to some other ailment. And Uzziah's glory as mighty king, ruler of a Jerusalem surrounded by an iron dome, comes to an end. This, then, is the lesson of Israel's first great defensive invention. Defend Jerusalem with inventiveness and alacrity. That is critical. But also turn humbly and prayerfully to God. The late Ambassador Yehuda Avner of blessed memory reports that after Menachem Begin ordered the most dangerous and bold operation of his premiership, the attack on Iraq's nuclear reactor at Osirak, he was told, after a painful period of waiting, quote, "Sir, I am able to report that our aircraft have just destroyed Saddam Hussein's nuclear reactor by direct hits. Our planes are on their way home now. The raid took fewer than 90 seconds. Avner goes on to describe the prime minister's reaction. "Baruch Hashem," cried Begin, clapping his hands in jubilation. "Oh, thank God. Oh, thanks to the Almighty for having blessed us with such fine sons as pilots. Then to me, please connect me with the American ambassador." Avner further recounts how the American ambassador implicitly criticized the strike for being preemptive and not, as he saw it, in self-defense. And then Avner tells us Begin's response, quote, "Self-defense?" Begin's tone escalated to a feisty pitch. "What greater act of self-defense could there be than to demolish Saddam Hussein's weapons of mass destruction, designed to bring Israel to its knees, kill our people, vaporize our infrastructure, in a word, to destroy our nation, our country, our existence," end quote. Part of the purpose of Jerusalem 365 is to see patterns in Jewish history and in the story of the sacred city. In the story of Uzziah, we learn of the need to think creatively about the defense of the Holy Land and of Jerusalem, how it is central to the ultimate legacy of every leader in Jerusalem. But we also learn the importance of faith and humility on the part of Jerusalem's leaders, and how essential it is to pray to God and to thank him for Jerusalem's endurance. And today, of course, we pray to the God of our fathers to grant creativity to the defenders of the Holy Land and to preserve and safeguard the sacred city for generations to come and onward into eternity. This is Meir Soloveitchik. Looking forward to learning together tomorrow. Signing off.